All right, let's see how this goes. It is early afternoon, December 28th. I hope everyone had a Merry Christmas and a great time with friends and family, really reflecting on what they can make happen in the year ahead. I am glad to be walking again. It's been quite a week. On top of the regular holiday madness, I had two personal training sessions this week, which is the usual, but they were moved around. And despite me not hitting the milestone I had hoped, which is being 100 pounds down by 2025, I'm still very, very close to that ambitious target. Here I am this morning. I weighed in at 480 pounds, which I think is amazing, truthfully, because what that means is I really am only 6 pounds away from that target I had set for the end of the year. Yes, it's a small failure, missing that ambitious target by a couple of days, but hey, at least I'm within the same ballpark, which is very nice to see. It's interesting because I've taken the big leap of sharing these little updates with a wider audience. As some of you may know, I repost everything I write for the Liber Solutions Network, my Tech Freedom multimedia project, to Substack. A lot of the people I've collaborated with have been from Substack. I find the community there, at least in my corner of it, to be quite decent. I think Substack has done a great job at attracting some people who are really interested in having important discussions, but more importantly, in the level of detail that matters. I think what originally attracted a lot of people to it during the COVID crisis years was that it was a place where you could share long-form content and people could respond to each other, and there were the community features. This is something I hope kind of moves to the Fediverse as time goes on. My character limit on my Mitra instance is pretty long, but I'm really thinking I might want to harass the developer. It's like, how can we really make this a prime publishing experience? I mean, maybe if I scrounge up some Monero, I can pay him for his troubles. But anyways, so I've created a second Substack because I didn't really want to share all my weight loss updates with my Tech Freedom newsletter. I feel like that would be a little obnoxious. Although maybe some people would honestly appreciate it. I've decided to separate those two out. So now I'm calling the newsletter, which I hope you'll still follow this on the RSS feed on my personal website, because yay, decentralization. But it's also going to be published on my Substack called Microdosing Failure. As I've mentioned before, I've really gotten used to the fact that taking on a problem as big as this requires you to overcome and desensitize yourself to various forms of failure, because you're never going to make all the changes you need in a single day and do them flawlessly. There will always be hiccups on the journey. So, sticking with the theme, the microdosing failure I've done is that not only am I failing to meet my crazy ambitious target, which is fine, honestly, I'm pretty happy to be within the same ballpark of it, although I am still a little disappointed I didn't quite make it happen. The other side of it is I got really ambitious earlier this month. I'm like, if I want to hit the target, I'm gonna have to do kettlebell swings every day. That was my crazy objective. That was my super ambitious target for this month, was to do 100 kettlebell swings a day. I successfully did it for 10 days in a row, and then the basically day-to-day pain of doing that was honestly just way too much. And for the last, I want to say week, I basically tapped out of it entirely. Again, I'm disappointed I wasn't able to maintain it, but I think kettlebells are incredibly useful equipment, and I'm thinking what I might do is I might redesign my daily kettlebell workout to not focus so much on a single exercise, but do a variety of exercises that my trainer has taught me and that I can look up on YouTube and just do stuff like that. Because I think as far as personal functional strength, kettlebells do seem to be one of the better investments you can make if you spend the time getting the most out of them. I chose a lower... When I bought my kettlebell, I got a lower weight than I could handle because I wanted to make sure I was not risking injury by doing something every day. And I'm grateful to say that doing 100 kettlebell swings a day absolutely made me stronger. In all the areas that affected, I noticed some pretty crazy differences by day 6, and I guess I am still a little disappointed I was not able to maintain it the entire month. But it is the kind of thing that I would like to be able to do. And so I want to begin this crazy plan again. Again, it won't be exactly 100 kettlebell swings. It'll probably be a combination of swings, squats with the kettlebell, cleans, those kinds of things. Because I really do appreciate how useful a tool it is to really build up your strength. And that's something I kind of wanted to talk about this process, because really where I learned about microdosing failure really was in getting stronger. When you are trying to lift heavier and heavier weights, you are never going to succeed to hit the weight you want every single time. The only way you persist to get stronger is to basically fail at the same exercise over and over again, which is why in the strength training community, they call it training to failure. You know, you do that exercise either as many times or at the heaviest capacity you can until your body basically can't do it anymore. And this is something that's actually near and dear to my heart because, oddly enough, I want to say a year or two back, I had this kind of scary circumstance where I fell in the tub. And that's was a little painful, but wasn't really the end of the world. But what kind of was a bit of a wake-up call to me is when I fell down in that tub, I realized, I'm like, oh, I can just put my feet flat and just push myself back up. That'll be fine. And what I realized was that I was not strong enough to lift my body into an upright position from a squat. And I remember pushing as hard as I could and my body just not moving. And that was a terrifying, terrifying experience because truthfully, that was the first time in my life I had experienced consciously noticing that I was trying to do something and the body just wouldn't cooperate. And so now, as I've been going to the gym and doing a bunch of strength training, I've gotten close to that a couple of times, but I've never hit the same level of like, well, maybe not never. I think I was doing lunges one time and felt something eerily similar, but it was not quite totally the same. I'm like, yeah, I'm sure I could put a ton of weights on a bar and like recreate the sensation, but it's really, really fascinating to me that there is a difference between what you can do and what you absolutely cannot do in terms of how your body communicates that to you. And so I'm incredibly grateful for the opportunities I have to really embark on this journey. My family is very supportive. I remember writing in my original post that, like, I really want to point out that this is a long campaign. I mean, I feel weird when people congratulate me on the effort now, because I'm like, I was trying at the start, it just took a while to actually materialize. But the truth of the matter is, it's very hard to know what's working and what isn't. And so I really do appreciate the fact that, I guess by trying out more things end up working, and that momentum really does build. And I was really not sure what I wanted to talk about today, on this walk of mine. And I decided that I actually haven't talked publicly at all about how my personal training has gone. I wrote that piece up when I did my first personal training session, but I actually haven't really elaborated too much on how it's going. And ironically, part of it is it's going super well. I connect very well with my personal trainer. I went through the process of my other half and I. We saw this commercial for this gym, oddly enough, when we were watching the movie Fly Me to the Moon, the one with Channing Tatum and Scarlett Johansson. And in the commercials, there was this commercial for a gym that was opening up nearby. And I'm like, wow, that's amazing. And so I wanted to look into it. And we pulled up the reviews. And it was full of people super salty that they had the audacity to stay open during a health crisis. Why would a gym, of all places, have the nerve to care about people's health during what is ostensibly the greatest health crisis that people in people's lifetime? And so to me, while I'm sure that may dissuade people who felt really strongly about that issue on the other side, for me, this was a mark of quality. So I basically emailed the owner with the email that was left in the commercial. I said, hey, I'm interested in training. Here's my situation. I'm pretty big. I don't have a scale. You know, just laying out this, like, yeah, I'm in a pretty bad state. You know, this isn't just some guy who wants to, like, run faster or whatever. And so anyways, we met up with him, had a bit of a chat, went pretty good. I mean, I was still incredibly nervous. I was equal parts excited. I was thrilled that this is a potential opportunity I have. And this is really back in the summer. Back in the summer, this was all just a crazy idea I had. And so, after talking with him, meeting with him, there was a bit of back and forth of waiting for the gym to actually open. And then he had me come in for a weigh-in and a couple of sessions. And that was honestly such a phenomenally challenging thing, because the first month of it, I'm just learning. I'm just learning what personal training really is. Like, I haven't done it before. I was never somebody who was really that on top of my athleticism game. And so it was a little daunting that it's like, oh yeah, you go to the gym and he leads you through a bunch of exercises and you still don't even really know what's happening. You know, it's like, oh, I'm doing all these things. They hurt. They're weird. And it's like, I was starting pretty small. Like, some of the earliest things he had me do was like lean against a bar and put my weight on my toes. And what I didn't realize, but it's so obvious in hindsight, is because my trainer's focus, I guess, somewhat is body mechanics, which I guess is like an important part of the discipline across the board. He was really able to see how to build up my how to build me up as a functional individual, instead of me just saying, oh, I don't know, bicep curls and doing that every week and being like, huh, why aren't I more mobile? It was really fascinating because at the time I didn't connect the picture at all. At the time I was just doing these exercises. I'm like, they're hard. I'm getting better at them, but I don't really know what the purpose of all this is. But then the more my body has strengthened in all these different ways, the more I'm now able to see in hindsight how much those were kind of like baby steps into building into what I can do now. I have this video of me doing a sit-up, and it's kind of funny because my friend pointed out, he's like, do you have any idea how many people can actually do a sit-up? And I'm like, no, I have no idea. And for me, it's one of those things where I didn't anticipate I'd be able to do a sit-up at all until I had kind of lost all the weight. Like, yeah, I'm flailing my hands around to get some momentum going. But again, at my size, I still consider it pretty impressive across the board. And so the personal training journey has been interesting because I basically go there, have a nice chat with my trainer, and he guides me through various exercises and like learning the basics of doing stuff at the gym and that kind of stuff. And it's really been helpful for me because I'm a couple months into this, and I think I could do a decent job of my own, but certainly nowhere near as optimally. Like, it's kind of like, why would you get a teacher if you know something, if you can learn something on your own online. Yes, there's nothing stopping me from not getting personal training anymore and, you know, looking up exercises day by day and following them. But just like we're having an actual teacher to guide you through a progression, to guide you through what you probably need to know, they have a longer vision of how this stuff works, and they've seen many other people try and fail. And I had this kind of realization when I was punching the speed bag. That's something I like to do before my sessions, is show up early and hit the speed bag a little bit, just to work in a little bit of extra cardio, because it's something I can manage. And there's always this thing in movies and books and like fiction generally, even legends, where it's like, oh, the ambitious young person goes to the master, and they tell the master he wants to learn his secrets and his skills, and the master's like, you're not ready. And he's like, well, what do you mean? I'm, you know, I'm strong, I'm ready, I want to do this. And he's like, why do you want to do this? And then the student will say something along the lines of like, I want it so that I can conquer my enemies. And then it's like, well, why do you want to conquer your enemies? And he'll usually say some variation of like, for freedom or for safety or whatever this stuff. And then generally what ends up happening is that the master forces the person to confront the real roots of what's actually motivating them to want power, to want to do these things. And it's fascinating to me, because when I put that together, you know, most people think of losing weight as purely a vanity exercise. You know, it's like, why would you want to reverse the situation I'm in? And for me, a lot of this has to do with realizing I'm so tired of living like this. But that's not the same thing as being tired of living. So the point of all this, in my mind, is that you only get the clarity of purpose to focus in on something that's really important to you if you actually know what you truly want. Because I think there's this huge problem where it's really easy to have only surface level motivations for things. And I'm not saying wanting to get healthy, to look better, is necessarily a shallow thing. I actually think there's a lot to appreciate in that journey. But on the other hand, I think you have to ask yourself, why do you really want it? Is it because you want to be better respected? Is it, well, why do you want to be better respected? Is it because you don't respect yourself very well? And I will say, as much of an awkward segue this has all been, it was incredibly helpful for me to sort out many of my emotional challenges prior to going to the gym. I'm not saying I fixed everything, that's for darn sure. I'm still impatient, I still struggle with doubt and all these other negative feelings, but I feel like I'm in a completely different circumstance than when I was still mired in the worst of it. And so the thing is that one of the praise I get a lot from my trainer is he constantly says I'm one of the more hardest working people that he's seen. Now maybe the bar is pretty low. Maybe your average personal training client goes to the trainer and is like, oh, there's nothing I can do. And they let the hopelessness get them, or they're not willing to think about it enough, or they don't have the time. Let's be honest, time is a precious commodity that I am fortunate to have in this circumstance. Not that it hasn't come at a cost. And so anyways, I really do appreciate having a trainer who is so motivated and knowledgeable and encouraging, because I do think there is a huge difference between, and this has to do with a broader conversation, I think there's a huge difference between wanting to help someone, let's just say, meet a set of criteria, versus actually wanting to help them achieve a more holistic vision of what being healthier is. And I even said from the beginning, you know, my primary goal was mobility, And I feel way more mobile than I have in honestly a couple of years. If I really think about how comfortable I am walking right now, you know, for as long as I am in the cold, this is such a dramatic shift from how I've been recently. Is it hard? Absolutely. I come home after these walks and my feet are just screaming. I think while I was beginning to make serious progress on my plantar fasciitis, I think calming down over the winter season unfortunately kind of made it a little bit worse. So I still have quite a ways to go. And that really loops in with the whole microdosing failure circumstance where I have to learn to push through some regressions. I am going to put back some of the pains and aches if I'm not able to consistently make progress throughout life, but that is life. And so I am really appreciative that so many people have been so encouraging. In fact, my trainer posted a before and after photo of first the photo of me at the grand opening at the gym, and then a photo we took at the last session to compare to show off to people how well I was doing. And the comments were amazing. It got like 180 likes. It got quite a few comments from people. Some I recognize, some I have no idea who they are. And, you know, people are just really just well poor. People are, and there's just so much of an outpouring of support. And like, I will say, that has been the thing that has surprised me the most about this journey. I would never have expected how kind, how encouraging, how supportive people in general can be in this process. Because I'm going to be honest, I am way harder on myself than other people are to me. Most of my feelings of negativity are either being hard on myself or projecting my hard on myself feelings on people around me. And that was something I needed to work on really hard. You know, if I'm going to walk into every personal training session, assuming my trainer thinks I'm useless because, well, let's be honest, I have my limitations, that would absolutely color the interactions. It would make it harder to connect and really push forward. And so I'm very, very appreciative that I found somebody who connects with me and can actually work together with me to really push forward. And I feel the need to kind of say, is it necessary to hire a personal trainer to lose weight? And truthfully, I would actually say no. I would say if you're in the circumstance where exercising itself does not, in whatever way that is to you, does not feel like a major obstacle, I would say just do that. I'm not saying you shouldn't have a trainer, however. Obviously, it has helped me a ridiculous amount, and I have seen people at the gym in all kinds of body shape, situation, and ages, all being able to benefit incredibly from some guided instruction. But the discussion on is it necessary to lose weight? Would I be unable to lose weight without it? Probably not. One of the things I'm noticing at my situation, at my size, is that I'm now comfortably below 500 pounds, but still above four, you know, I'm 480 right now. And so I do not have the cardiovascular strength to exercise in a way that will seriously matter in terms of planning what to eat. And so I think there's kind of a patience that's required at this size where 90%, I'll say 90% of the changes you need to make are diet related. And you could do that on the cheap. I mean, if you want to have nothing but protein powder, greens, shakes, and, you know, the couple of eggs every day, I can't tell you how great that is overall, but it's certainly less expensive than some of the other options. But again, there's what my twin brother calls the will to live factor, where most people require some level of comfort to remain sane. I think I do fit in that category quite well. And so that's part of the reason why I think the emotional side is so important, because I realized how much of my compulsive eating was traced directly on to emotional pain. And I really have to give Patrick Phillips a whole lot of credit for telling me that if you're feeling pain, you should soothe the pain, which I erroneously interpreted as to, oh, I should eat, which was not probably at all what he meant. Certainly not at all what it means, but that was kind of how I counterintuitively interpreted it at the time. Now I have a very different perspective, because when it comes to exercise, in terms of the overall weight loss equation, at my size, exercise has nothing to do with burning calories. Yes, it's a nice little bonus. But in truth, I am convinced the real benefit of exercise is the stress reduction inherent in it. Like, I was super nervous about Christmas. I was super nervous about family interactions. I was nervous about eating too much. I was worried about looking weird for not eating as much. You know, all those little things that seep into your brain and make you worry about things. And I was very lucky that on Monday, I had my personal training session, so I got a really good workout in, and I felt really great afterwards. And I will say, as somebody who's like this big, it sucks being this big. It's hard being this big. It's depressing being this big. And the confidence and, you know, mood boost inherent to actually having a good workout with, you know, a trainer, of course, makes it nicer because you've got a helpful friend on the journey. You know, for me, I will say is invaluable. Because one of the things I pointed out in one of my recent blog posts is that it's certainly possible for me to lose weight by just slurping meal replacement shakes and playing Star Citizen all day. But the problem is that, like, you need to stay sane. And if you have a demanding job, or if you're in the situation where, like, you have real pressures being introduced in your life, I would argue that you're setting yourself up for even more failure, because how are you going to resist the pressures that are being put on you and the temptation to capitulate and take the easy route? Unfortunately, I am convinced now more than ever that health is a very difficult target to make in our current world environment. And many people are lucky. I'm not going to say nobody's healthy or everybody's secretly unhealthy in ways we don't understand. But what I will certainly grant is that for many people just trying to get by, it's very hard to see why you would prioritize health when there are so many more immediate concerns. And I can tell you that was my mistake for well over a decade. I spent a lot of time being like, well, it doesn't matter how I eat. I have to, like, get through this shift. I have to get through this week. I have to get through this month. And unfortunately, that does catch up for you. I really don't want to tell anyone that they're to blame when a series of difficult circumstances pressured them into making decisions that ended up hurting them. I mean, that's a tale as old as time when it comes to addictions. Somebody has some sort of unfortunate life circumstances. They adopt some substance or behavior to alleviate that pain, and then suddenly they're stuck into this cycle. And in my opinion, there does need to be a serious amount of awareness and humility for people to recognize that this is something we are kind of doing to people. And the callousness of, you know, for instance, whenever I browse weight loss forums and discussions, people are like, oh, well, they're terrible people who just need to eat less. And it's like, I don't know. I'm certainly not there. As somebody who's in my situation, understanding how daunting and how terrifying it is to face the daily failures that are inherent with trying to lose weight, it's hard. And I'm not going to tell someone that if they're not capable of just flipping a switch in their brain and doing it overnight, that they're somehow inferior or morally deviant or whatever the characterization may be, because the truth of the matter is, I didn't even turn this around in a day. I wrote that New Year's resolution post in December of last year, a year ago. And that's only me deciding to be public about it. The idea that that was the first time I had thought about losing weight is ridiculous, because I had actually lost 80 pounds before in the past and gained it all back. And so one of the things that made it so hard for me to begin this journey again and actually make progress was simply the fact that I had already regained so much weight and put it on again that I was terrified of doing that all over again from an even worse perspective. And the truth of the matter is, I am still terrified of that potential outcome. I'm doing everything I can to try to prevent it. But the truth of the matter is that you can only move forward by facing the potentiality of failure. Because if you're not willing to face the potentiality of failure, you're not going to try. And obviously, you miss 100% of shots you don't take. And so this is very, very personal to me, because I worry that we're kind of sandwiched in between two unhelpful mindsets. We have, on the one hand, the people that I'll broadly call the victim blamers. People basically want to say that the rise in obesity in the population is totally everyone's individual moral failing, and there are no broader or systematic factors or commonalities that make it easier to be understood or contextualized. On the other hand, I am highly concerned as well about the enablers. And I can't help but notice that this is like two sides of effectively the same coin. The two sides of the blamers and the enablers coin is they both want people to feel like it's hopeless. And I tell you, as somebody who struggled with a great deal of hopelessness in this scenario, I can tell you that the hopelessness is far more mental than actual. I'm not saying I know how to reverse any individual person's situation. All I know is how I've been able to do it in my life, because the fact of the matter is, this is an incredibly individual pursuit. I think the reason why personal training works so darn well to help people is because you have one person who understands one other person helping them throughout a couple of times a week. And so that one-to-one connection is so important, because that trainer then has the opportunity to begin to understand that individual person's strengths and weaknesses. And this matters too if you're doing it alone. If you're trying to make these kind of changes in your own life, I am personally convinced that you require a serious level of introspection and reflection on these issues, on your own individual circumstances, strengths, weaknesses, ability to tolerate various things. Because the one thing that has given me so much hope in this journey is that you really can start small. I certainly do not have a very high pain tolerance, but I can certainly admit that this whole process of getting stronger and dealing with muscle soreness has at least gradually raised my pain tolerance. And that's really a fantastic sign, because it means you don't have to do it all at once. That means if you start exercising, you don't have to do full body workouts and then worry about a full body agony in the following days. You can start small. And most people in the weight loss forums I frequent basically argue, until you're a fairly healthy size, most people just recommend walking anyways. Personally, I would suggest some form of low impact strength training. Like, the nice thing about lifting weights is you're not really worried about jamming your joints against high level of forces. You're just grabbing a weight and you're moving it within the range of motion that you can, and gradually moving from there. I will say, Walking is incredibly difficult at my size. I've made a huge amount of improvements. Like, for instance, the fact that I've been able to walk the entire time you've been listening here is its own achievement at this rate. But the truth of the matter is that this is still a challenging thing for me to do, and that makes me deal with the leftover mental emotional barriers that if I think, oh, I should go to the grocery store and grab some veggies or meat or whatever, and I'm still mentally thinking that it's as hard as it was when I was physically incapable of walking for longer distances. And so, back to the blamers and enablers, I'm convinced they are both part of some kind of demoralization plot to tell people that there is no such thing as gradually improving your circumstances, or that it's not worth it to fight against the system that is working against you. You've got some people who are saying, oh, well, the sugar industry and pharma and everything are colluding to make us fat and unhealthy, therefore there's nothing we can do. And then you have the blamers who will be like, oh, well, you're just mentally, physically, or morally weak, that you don't have the discipline to make it happen. And I can tell you, discipline is not an on or an off thing. Discipline is something you build by building up your own confidence. You're never going to be able to do it all at once. But the great news is that you don't need to. I am not concerned about what choices people make in their own lives, but I absolutely do want to dispel any despair, any fear, or any disbelief that it is possible to make meaningful improvements. Because let's be honest, let's say that the blamers and enablers are correct. Let's say they're both right, that I am too morally weak to resist temptation, and the deck is stacked against me so damn hard that this is as far as I'm going to go. I've lost just over 90 pounds, and this has got to be it. You know what? I could live with that. I could live with the fact that I've gone from basically being all but bedridden to now being able to go on walks, to cook for myself and my other half, and to be moderately more useful to the people around me. You know what? If that's all I've been able to accomplish in this arduous journey of a year, and it will not get better from here, no matter what I do, you know what? That's still a whole lot better than things were a year ago. Now, I have a feeling if we revisit this idea a year from now, we will find out that the situation is not this hopeless. I certainly am in a bind. There are a lot of stressors and fears coming up for me this year, and a lot of uncertainty, and that is very daunting. It is very hard to continue going forward without having a feeling of safety. I basically had to, this entire time, eschew the idea that I cannot make longer term plans. I remember growing up, it was drilled into me. You have to have a 5-year plan, you have to have a 10-year plan, you have to like have your entire life planned out and then live through it like a robot. And it's funny, because all the chaos and instability in the world these days has basically convinced me that of all the things that are impossible, that is impossible. You know, even the best military commanders will tell you the best plan is thrown out the window the moment shit actually gets real. And well, in life, it feels like it's real all the time. And so, my strategy, instead of constantly worrying about what this is all gonna be like 5 years from now, or whatever the 10-year plan is, I'm just trying to do the best I can day by day. And it's hard because I'm really not good at living in the moment. Oh my goodness. I spent the entire time after I came up with the idea that I could be down 100 pounds by 2025. I spent the entire time thinking about, oh, what am I doing today to make that more or less likely? I think that was helpful. It certainly helped me keep my head in the game, which I think is important and valuable. But the truth of the matter is that I'm actually not going to set the same kind of goal this year. This year, I've already done an amazing job at turning this situation around. The 2025 is going to be my let's see how good I can do year. For instance, I am very disappointed that December's weight loss was not as great as November's, which was not as great as October's, which again, for all the weather reasons, is not particularly shocking. However, my way of adapting for this is that my bar for success for January 2025 is that if January I lose more weight and make more mobility gains than I did in December, I'm considering that a win. And so, as far as long-term planning goes, I'm really just going month to month at this point. Because, well, yes, I could go back to my spreadsheet, dig into the numbers, and come into a best guess of where I'll be by 2026. I'm not going to make the same amount of target until maybe I'm like in the summer of this year and I'll have 6 months telling me how I did, and I'll use that to come up with a guess for the rest of the year. I'm really excited for so many things as I continue to make progress. Honestly, I miss biking so much. I don't just miss biking for biking's sake. I miss the freedom I felt from using biking as my primary mode of transportation. I miss when biking 30 kilometers a day wasn't something that was weird or out of reach for me. It was something I was actually doing, getting to work and back. And what's interesting to note is this wasn't when I was in the best shape of my life. No, this is something I was doing at like 300 pounds. That's like, that's an amazing leap of progress from here. But the nice thing is that I know when I'm 300 pounds, when I get down in this journey, I'll be so much stronger, so much more capable than I even was back then. And that's what I'm looking forward to. Is there so much improvement, there's so much opportunity that can be done on this long journey that I really want to tell anyone who's afraid or, you know, doesn't really think they can lose weight over a long period of time. It's stressful to not be able to lose it all in a month. I'm constantly disappointed that I wake up in the morning and it's like, hey, I'm still fat, you know, I still got a lot of work to do. But I tell you, that is a blessing in some ways. You would be really surprised to realize, as I have, that it means you can work on other things. You're not just locked in to a weight loss torture chamber the entire time from 500 pounds to a normal weight. You're actually in the situation where you can make progress on other things because there really is only so much time you can commit to weight loss. Regardless of what your eating habits are, generally they're constrained to some period of time. And really, I can only exercise so much in a given day. This hour plus walk that I'm doing right now is basically the sum total of what I can do. And yeah, that's a big chunk of time for a lot of people, but you don't have to do it all at once like me. Maybe going out for 5 minutes and then another 5 minutes is more your speed. In fact, one of the things I wish I had more this winter was I wish I had more room and equipment for working out at home. Because I think for many people, there's this huge fear of the judgment of going into a gym and like being big around other people. And I won't pretend that's easy. You know, every day I walk into the gym, I do feel a little bit of that, but you have to remember, now that's mostly on your side. You know, for me, it's not because anyone's told me anything. Everyone at the gym I'm at are super nice. I know the fact that people have treated me with nothing but kindness for a couple of months now. And people are genuinely appreciative. I've had people told me that not only they, but also their clients find it inspiring when they see me there, which to me makes no sense at all. I'm like, I'm just a big guy here. But it's true. And so even if you are worried about that kind of judgment, there is a lot that can be done from home. I mean, the challenge with being very big is that it's really not clear where to start. And actually, oddly enough, around the time I was getting into personal training, I found a couple of videos, because I was looking, like, on YouTube, exercises for morbidly obese people at home. And there were some weird suggestions people had, where basically, like, you'd be sitting in a chair, and you'd start doing a squat, you'd, like, start doing, you know, various kind of movements in the chair. Truthfully, I didn't have the patience for that kind of exercise. I guess it's an ego thing, but I like being in the gym and doing, you know, the weighted squats and all the fancy stuff, which, let's be honest, took a while to work towards. I wasn't doing that week one. But my point is that there is a lot of flexibility as far as what are the options available to help you become more mobile. And in my experience, that's really the people that, in my experience, that's something that I think is the most important. I'm not super invested in who's at what weight and making judgments on people based off that. My personal concern has always primarily been mobility and capability. And the truth of the matter is that I think mobility, if it's something you can reclaim, you will absolutely regret not doing it. I already feel a significant amount of regret for not starting this journey earlier. But the truth of the matter is, one of the things that has helped me come to terms with that is that, like, this is gonna sound weird, like, you know, it's gonna sound weird to some people, but I think I was actually supposed to learn what I've learned over the COVID years. Because what ends up happening is some people, when they lose the weight, they tend to be pretty hard on overweight people. And I think the only two groups of people who are really hard on overweight people across the board are either the overweight people themselves, because, oh boy, I've done a lot of that, and people who were overweight, or people who used to be overweight. Now, I think this has to do with the fact that if somebody who is incredibly overweight, like myself, is motivated primarily by self-hatred over what they have done to themselves, I'm not gonna say they can't lose the weight. I think in many scenarios, it's actually quite possible. If you're the kind of person that can turn that self-hatred into fuel. The truth of the matter is, I simply cannot. I was never able to turn self-hatred into fuel, and so I did require a significant amount of time working on my own self-hatred over the weight and other things. But the problem is if somebody has lost the weight based off their own self-hatred for their situation, I worry that it makes it harder for them to be, I don't want to say compassionate or even understanding, but I think it makes it hard for them to have a nice bedside manner when it comes to talking or even thinking about other overweight people. Because what I would tell those people is you would be very surprised at how not every person is able to turn self-hatred into motivation fuel. I know it sounds crazy to those who were able to do it, but I tell you it is not the same in every single person. If somebody is the kind of person who can do it that way, would I encourage them to? Truthfully, not really, because I would think if somebody is able to turn self-hatred into motivation fuel, I could only wonder how powerful they would be if they actually resolved their self-hatred and found something else more motivating to turn into motivation fuel, and I think they would be quite unstoppable. But the truth of the matter is that I think one of the problems is that many of us who are pretty big, there is a huge tendency to project our own self-hatred on everyone around us. And I still do that a certain amount. Like, I've made progress on it, but I'm not going to say I'm done. And I'm worried a little bit that even as I, you know, approach a healthy body weight, it's possible I could still have that problem. And that's the other thing I find so weird about this journey, is the fact of the matter is that body perception is a very weird thing. I've talked before about how when I go to the gym and I look in the mirror, I give myself a good hard look, and I'm touching myself places to feel where the contours are, I still feel like my mental image of myself doesn't match up with what it actually is. Now, maybe that's not the end of the world. Maybe as I get down lower, it'll balance out one way or another. But I am concerned about having some form of body dysmorphia, where if I actually am a healthy weight, but have the body image of someone my size, I mean, I think there's something wrong there. I have no idea what the strategies for dealing with that are. I kind of feel like that's a bridge I'll have to cross when I get there. But the fact of the matter is that I'm going to be very grateful to be capable and active again, regardless of where that takes me. And that, I think, is the really hard part about this journey for many people, is that we know we're in this situation. We know we're, you know, going to have to go through a lot of pain and suffering just to change it. Never mind just endure it, because that has its own costs as well. But I think it takes a lot in a person to let go of the feeling that, oh, if I do all this, I'll be perfect again. Because the truth of the matter is, well, no person's perfect. Losing weight does not make you any more perfect than somebody who didn't need to. Let's be honest. Perfection is not a thing that exists in people. And so we need to be careful with ourselves that we are not over-promising ourselves what is actually at the end of the tunnel. Which is why I'm focusing so much on gratitude. I talked about how it's not that big a deal that weight loss takes so long, because there are other things you're gonna wanna work on the way down. And for me, I find one of them really is gratitude. There was this vegan influencer I used to listen to who pointed out that gratitude is the secret to happiness, which is, I'm pretty sure, a very common saying across thoughtful people across the board. And so I found gratitude has gone a long way to help me be at peace with many things. Because really, I could be super hung up about the fact that I didn't make my 100 pounds down by 2025 target, or I could be grateful that I'm close to it. I could be grateful that this has been a phenomenal month as far as people being appreciative and encouraging and me trying to make baby steps to improve my situation. I think gratitude is hard because as challenging as it can be to be grateful for things other people do, I find gratitude for things you do even harder. Like, I really struggle to give myself credit for anything. You know, I'm almost down 100 pounds. I'm like, yeah, but I'm not, like, done yet. You know, like, it's very hard emotionally to what I would say is have the warranted level of gratitude for what you put in. And I think that alone is a big barrier for many people. It was a huge barrier for me where I'm like, oh, what's the point in making progress if one binge will undo a week or 2 weeks of progress? Like, that's a hard question. And then when you do those 1 week or 2 weeks of progress, it doesn't feel as real when you're like, yeah, but like, I'm like one McDonald's binge away from fixing that. Like, it's very hard when you're in these demoralized states to really understand what can be done. And I think a lot of it has to do with giving yourself credit. And I can't even give myself credit for coming up with this, not because I shouldn't, but because this is something my other half, who has been very generously trying to drill into me because she sees it. But I think I mentioned this already in this walk. I got posted to the gym's Facebook page, and many people were sharing very, very kind, very generous, very encouraging and uplifting comments. And, you know, to me, I read them and I feel good. Like, I'm not saying I don't, like, appreciate them at all, but I know I am not as moved by those comments as I really should be. And to really put this into perspective, I showed them to my other half, who, like, basically broke down and crying at what this all means. And it's like, that's a bit of a reality check to me, that it's like, here I am, unmoved by people appreciating and encouraging me for making the progress I've already done. Well, let's be honest, it was just a before and after photo. It's not like I was really giving them these kind of explanations you guys are getting from listening to my blogs. They literally just saw a before and after photo and were saying, you know, all these nice things. And I really do wish I was better at letting in the gratitude for those things. I'm trying. I tell you guys, I am trying my best. I do know it's something I need to work on, and that's why I'm doing it. But oh my goodness, it's a challenge. And so I think when you're in this state, when you're as heavy as I am, or when you're stuck in the bitterness of feeling like it can't get better, you really do numb yourself to these kind of interactions. And that's why, even though not everyone I know likes this book, the truth of the matter is, I think Peter Bregan's book is fantastic for conceptualizing why you need to tackle your numbness to genuine, loving interactions. And this is why I love, I believe it's Thomas Aquinas's definition of love, where loving is not simply being kind to somebody. Loving is wanting the best for them. You know, when you love your spouse, your friends, your family, your people you happen to meet, is it just about smiling at them and saying nice words? Or is it about understanding them and truly wishing that they excel at what they need to excel at so that they can live a happy, free, fulfilled, inspired life? And this is something that hits me near and dear close to home, because I think one of my problems with many discussions when it comes to people with actual serious problems is a lot of people want to use kindness, but not in a loving way. Because to me, love requires the truth. I will say that people absolutely want to hear what they want to hear. And the fact of the matter is that I don't think there's anything wrong with a generous amount of comfort to people who are having troubles. I will never be the person to say, oh, don't say something nice. That's horrible. You know, you should always be nice to people wherever you can. But I think love is not about harshness. It's not about tough love. But I think it is about the fact that you truly do have a greater responsibility to that person than merely being courteous. I think you have an even bigger responsibility to not only be as courteous as you can, because your extra responsibility does not nullify that requirement, but you are also required to truly care for them as a human being. And I think that is something that gets lost in many of these conversations, because you see people say, to respect me, you are required to abide by these terms and conditions that may be subject to change at any given time. But even that itself, is that really looking out for that person as a human being in ways that are truly good for them? And the fact of the matter is that we do not know what is truly good for anyone. And I think wishing the good of others requires a certain amount of faith that putting them in charge of determining their own good is fundamentally required. Because, you know, I believe we are given free will for a reason. And one of the really basic explanations of this is that people were given free will so that they could love God with all their hearts. And I feel like we should feel the same way about wishing good on others. Wishing good on others is not deciding what we believe is their ultimate good and then using them as an instrument to achieve it. Instead, I believe that our purpose is to merely either be an example or to be a guide in whatever capacity we can be to those people so that they can make decisions towards their ultimate good, which may or may not overlap with our conception of their ultimate good. And that sounds really high and mighty and all that stuff, but what I'm really trying to say is that I am concerned about the politicization of health. Truthfully, this is nothing new, but it's something that as somebody who's been close to the MAHA discussions, Make America Healthy Again, discussions around RFK Jr., I am concerned that there is this impetus that people are like, oh, we're just going to make people healthy again with this very narrow conception of what healthy is without addressing broader, serious issues. And I think that's a problem. And so what I'm hoping is that people really recognize the importance of people's agency. Because yes, I'm sure it's possible for General Kennedy to throw everybody in fat camps, and ta-da, we've solved the obesity crisis. And I'm not saying that wouldn't have advantages. I mean, the military certainly screaming across the board about how they need people to be less obese to hit their military recruitment numbers. But the truth of the matter is, I think, at least in my understanding of freedom and goodness and all that, is that we genuinely want people to choose the good. We can't force the good on other people. Because what ends up happening when you do that too much is that you create this scenario where everybody's just simply obsessed with the appearances of good without the substance of it. And this is one of the things that disturbs me the most about many of the people who are really enmeshed in the political arena right now, where the goal fundamentally is to imagine a perfect society and instrumentalize everyone into creating that perfection. And I feel like any of us who are wise enough to know that utopians generally have a screw loose is that there are innumerable ways in which this can go wrong. And so I think the ultimate application of the precautionary principle is to allow people to use their own minds to optimize their situation with the information they have at hand. I know that's a really big meta rant about the whole thing, but it really is near and dear to my understanding of this entire situation. Because here I am, going on yet another longest walk I've gone on in quite a long time. And the question is why? Why stick with it? Why go through all this hassle? Certainly my life would be easier if I had simply not decided to do this and just tried to have gotten a decent paying job instead of sinking all the time I am into this nonsense. But the truth of the matter is, I do think it's important for at least myself to raise my ability to be capable. Because whether or not it's right or wrong, I do feel a great deal of shame for not being terribly capable and useful for those around me. And somebody can argue, ah, but you have inherent value beyond that. But the truth of the matter is, I still am dealing with that shame regardless of how people feel about it. And so I am really looking forward to being able to work hard and to make changes so that I can be more helpful to those around me, regardless of what the situation needs. Because, to be a little blunt about my motivations here, one of the things that is one of the many candles below my buttocks keeping the pressure hot is that unfortunately the chaos in this wild world of ours is not reassuring me about stability long term. As I am beginning to make progress, I am starting to appreciate just how instrumental meeting my goals may end up being as things become more and more deranged and unhinged. Because yesterday, I listened to an amazing interview between Ryan Christian of The Last American Vagabond and one of my favorite Canadian academics, Denny Rancourt, where he's basically discussing what he believes happened during the COVID crisis. And one of the things I fundamentally agree with him on is that regardless of what your position is on all these smaller details of the COVID years, I wholeheartedly agree with his analysis that we are in a more totalitarian system than when we started. Regardless of any particular piece of trivia you want to talk about the COVID years, it is undeniable that at least Canadian society, because that's the vantage point that both me and Denny Rancourt have, is absolutely significantly more totalitarian than it was before 2019. And that's a worrying sign, because many people are anticipating that once Justin Trudeau is out of office, that this will all evaporate like a nightmare and we will wake up in a better Canada. And the truth of the matter is, I do not believe that at all. I am very concerned that this is really only the beginning of a longer campaign, and as Denny Rancourt points out, that this kind of assaults on people really makes totalitarianism easily but more normalized, and so we're going to see it more in the future. And so I'm not saying I'm gearing up to lead the resistance single-handedly or anything like that, but I am certainly aware that being more capable and more able-bodied will allow me to be more useful to the people around me as these kinds of forces come to a head. I cannot predict the future, but what I can know is that I have an opportunity to change my situation for the better, and I want to do everything I can to make the best of it. My sincere hope is that I worry that this entire conversation has been a bit of a downer, but I really am in good spirits. I'm very excited that December, while not as great as I had hoped, was certainly nowhere near as bad as I had feared. And so I'm very optimistic about January and how things can go in 2025. And I am looking forward to people really learning and really thinking deeply about these matters that are scarier on the bigger picture. Because I actually think, just like my own personal health situation, I actually think that totalitarianism and tyranny are also problems that can be gradually worked on in ways that are unintuitively effective. Because I never would have imagined that all the little things I started doing in the moment to reverse my health situation would really add up in the way they have. And I have a feeling it's the same kind of thing with opposing dictators and tyrants and technocrats. They all fundamentally suffer from the same need to consolidate power in an atrociously inefficient way. And so I am excited about the fact that those of us who see this and have already been working diligently to try to figure out what we can do to oppose this, I actually think it's already working better than we think. Because if you're somebody like me, who is not sufficiently grateful for progresses that are made, just like I wake up every day being like, oh, it kind of sucks that I'm still pretty fat, the fact of the matter is, I think there are many people in the same kind of vein working diligently to oppose tyranny in ways that matter, that are like, oh my goodness, every day I wake up and I am still in this totalitarian nightmare. And the fact of the matter is, we are never going to know whether our efforts matter or not until we come to one-to-one with the Creator. You really cannot fully appreciate the scope of the kindness and generosity you have done to others until you finally see it in its totality. Because many people I believe if they're in my situation, where you struggle to appreciate how even small acts of kindness or improvement work for yourself, how can you possibly comprehend the ultimate good done by being kind and compassionate to others in small and simple ways? And fundamentally, that's the message I would like to leave us on for 2024. I've gone a huge ways at reversing my situation in ways that I really could not comprehend a year ago. A year ago, I wasn't even sure I could do this. I was optimistic, but I certainly was not expecting. And I feel like that's how we have to be in our efforts to oppose totalitarianism and tyranny. We have to be willing to give ourselves credit for the small victories. We have to be willing to truly reflect on what it is that is important and do everything we can to avoid the things that will erase the kind of progress we've been working towards. Because unfortunately, I do think it is quite similar to my weight loss, where simple, easy mistakes, shortcuts being taken, can certainly erase a lot of good. And I think that's one of the daunting things about our situation that makes it unimaginable that things could be better. And my attitude is that just like my weight loss situation showed me how my own life situation, even fairly close to my current size, could be radically better, I also believe that about society and humanity at large. We don't need to aim for utopia for things to be remarkably better. I think there are many basic, fundamental principles that we need to really stand by to really make it work. And so I guess I apologize for being super political about today's discussion. I mean, I'm never really non-political, let's be honest. Those of you who listen to me absolutely know where my stances are on things. But it's just, to me, it is very intertwined together. I do think it is important for those of us to do whatever we can, in whatever form that is. And it very often pays off in ways people don't understand. For instance, on the regular, I listen to one of my friends, Liam Sturgis's songs from his album Foreverland, The Things We Take With Us, the number two song in that album, and that's kind of been my healing anthem. Like, I don't think he truly appreciates how much that song has been a part of this journey. And that's kind of hard because I'm like, this is what I'm kind of saying, where so many little things, and I'm not saying a whole album is a little thing, I'm just saying small acts of kindness, in whatever form they may take, have impact on people in ways you don't see. And a perfect example of this is because I don't have Facebook. While I'm able to read the comments on the Facebook post about me on the gym, unfortunately, I am not able to log in and thank all the people leaving kind comments. And say, so they don't even know how much it means to me. And I swear, it does mean a lot to me, even if I know I don't appreciate them as much as I should. And they certainly have no clue that it caused my other half to break down into tears. And so I wish all of you, from the bottom of my heart, I thank you for listening to this recording of mine as I go for a new record of how long I can walk. And I wish you a lot of gratitude and a lot of success in the year ahead.